Welcome, Marvin. So nice to speak to you. We never have got to meet live yet, but hopefully soon in the future.
One day.
I know that you've done some great work at 500 Startups. Do you want me to update me and the audience exactly what you're doing now?
Yeah, sure. So maybe a quick bit about my background. So yeah. 22 years in tech, did the startup things for a couple of years, was a big tech exec at Yahoo doing international expansion for about 10 and a half years, did the boards and advisory boards and angel investing for a bit. Then I was a partner at 500 Startups. So I helped start the San Francisco office and helped run Fund 3 and Fund 4. And I also ran the Core Accelerator program. So I did that for about 6 years, left end of 2019 and, you know, walked right into the pandemic, right? Thought I was going to take last year off and go do some hiking and a lot of reading and writing and basically go and do the do some angel investing and the conference tour circuit. And well, that didn't happen. So, you know, I think we're just trying to survive last year. Thankfully sort of everything's kind of worked out. And so now I have a small angel fund. I joined a bunch of, I'm on a bunch of boards. I sit on a bunch of investment committees, about five different VC funds, and okay. I have my own small little rolling fund that is called Diaspora that I partnered up with a buddy. And we invest in pre-seed founders from Europe who want to come to the US.
Fabulous. It sounds like an exciting business that you've got there. Lots of interesting and passionate people, I'm sure, that you come across.
Yeah, so lucky.
Yeah. So I'm mainly focused on fintech, but of course, I have a huge investor network. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about, just due to current events, how the investing scene has been for you and other investors since the crisis.
Oh, I mean, it's been nuts, right? So if you think about sort of everything that happened last year, where it's like, I feel like sort of like the offline world kind of disappeared and we all kind of went online, right? So we're sort of, I talked about that, I think, in an interview like a couple of weeks ago, where it's like, I kind of feel like we're sort of in the metaverse now, right? Most of it not left our house, you know, all our interactions, even as you know, here in the Bay Area, where even in the Bay Area, where it's like, you want to meet people, nobody really wants to meet, where it's like, well, even though I'm right down the block, like we meet over coffee, but like, let's just do a Zoom call. And so it makes me wonder when I'm like, what the hell am I doing here? Spending all this money. Yeah. And so we are kind of living this metaverse. So actually from a investor perspective, like I, you know, like last year where just, I think we're all recovering from the shock of the pandemic, but like, it was very quiet from like, you know, March, April, May, where it's like, we're just trying to assess, work with the portfolio companies. And then kind of like July, it just went crazy. And so I wasn't investing last year. Like, you know, I've been investing this year, but I was investing last year, but I was talking a lot of my portfolio companies and like everyone was raising money. Everyone was out in the market. I was talking a lot of my VC friends. Like last year was frenzied. I'd never seen it that crazy or busy last year. And normally there's a slowdown during the summer. And there was not, like, you know, July, August, September, just it went all the way through to like, I think the last week of December. And this year, you know, everyone kind of came back like hard in sort of like mid-January. I definitely saw a slowdown in sort of like July, like June, July of this year, because I think a lot of people went on holidays and stuff, but it was still very active. Like I would say for compared to sort of prior, like compared to last year, it wasn't as active as last year of just like the deal flow and just like the speed of stuff. It was still very, very busy. Like compared to last year, it wasn't as crazy. Like this summer was not as crazy as last summer, but you know, this summer compared to say 2019, 2018, 2017 was nuts. And so I think investors were really busy. The velocity of deals have gone up.
I've heard that everyone's doing very well, which is great after that shock last year. And so tell me, what are you seeing the direction of startups that are reaching out for investment? Like what sort of focus and domains are they coming from?
I mean, SaaS and enterprise software continues. Well, I think, you know, there's a little bit of bias there too, right? Because of just like most of, I'm fairly, like not the best known, but I'm known for like a lot of my best companies in my portfolio tend to be B2B or SaaS as well as fintech. So you kind of get a lot of like inbound because of that. Yeah. I'm better known for sort of SaaS than I am for fintech, but I have quite a few like very, very good fintech companies in my portfolio. And so I've gotten a combination of like those. And so fintech has done incredibly well, right? Like just that space has been, it did very well last year.
And Birmingham.
I think Yeah, it's been booming, right? And so like every single sector, right? Like payments, when I was doing investing back in 2014, was not an area that people touched. But now, like last 2-3 years, like payment space has exploded, and not just here in the US, but like, you know, in Pakistan, in the MENA region, in Southeast Asia, like literally in every single region and country, like Latin America. And so fintech is really like, we just want to talk about fintech because of your audience. Fintech overall as a space is just really, really been doing very, very well, right? You look at the number of unicorns just that have been minted just in the last, like even remotely fintech related, just in the last, like this year alone. I have to go look at the numbers, but like, I do think that's probably one of the fastest growing spaces, right? And that's not including like DeFi and crypto, which is its own sector and trajectory and world. It's an exciting time to be in the business. So I've done, I've done 6 deals in the last 6 weeks or 7 weeks myself, you know, with my angel fund, with my partner Faris out of Saudi. And we've done now 6 deals and 2 of them were fintech related.
Great. And do you think that it was the crisis with everyone going online that helped support the boom in fintech?
I think that's one big aspect of it. Okay. And I do think more people coming online, so a lot more market demand. I also think like I'm going to rant about like PayPal, right? So, you know, somebody sent me some money today, and then you sort of like, after you sort of like, they take a fee there, and then sort of like, then you want to send your bank account, and they take a fee there too. And you're like, what? Like, you know, total, that's like 10, like up to 7 or 10%. You're like, wait, like, no wonder they're going to go spend this money. You know, like you saw the report, PayPal's going to spend like 40, potentially go and buy Pinterest for $45 billion. Right. And you're like, whoa, that's crazy. And it's like, well, of course they're going to do that because like, this is a potential way for them to get more customers, right? And integrate their offering in with this stuff. And you're like, okay, that's logical. But like, think about the amount of money they're minting. Right. So just I think about like PayPal, of just like one example, and they're pretty old, right? Like they're now been around like 20 years. And so they're kind of considered the old guard. That you know, like the user experience still kind of sucks. It does. Like there's all these processes. And so like you think about them where it's just like, wow, like this is why there's opportunities, right? The banks suck. They all suck, right? Like you, so it's just like why in like the UX, like a lot of them are not mobile friendly. So you look at all these examples where it's like, yeah, of course fintech is huge, right? Like and you look at, and I'm an old person, I'm like 47, where it's like, wow, like you look at young people where it's like their expectations of user experience, their expectations of speed, their expectations of everything is so high. And then they go and use these systems and go, this is terrible. Like, of course there's going to be huge opportunity, right? And then you have remote businesses. There's all these new industries growing, like on the creative space or just remote work now. Like most businesses, most startups now are built on a remote perspective. And so if you think about that part, like a lot of these old banking systems, a lot of these old payment systems, a lot of these old like payment tracking systems are not set up for this new world. And so there's lots of opportunities opening up.
Yeah. And so how do you see, what's your vision of what's going to happen in the financial industries? Let's just focus on the US, but what's your prediction? Like, where do you think things are going? Obviously, we've also, as you mentioned, we've also got Bitcoin, crypto and blockchain really shaking up the markets up and down, boom and bust. But what's your perspective? What's your insight that you see coming?
I think right now, sort of like, I actually think a lot of the innovation is not going to be happy. Like, look, I'm Canadian, so I just came back from Canada like a couple of days ago, and it's like, wow, like even like the way like their banking system is so much further ahead of just like the tool, the products, and this is right next door. And so the US is just, you know, like the reality is that it's an oligopoly in the banking system right now, and they're basically rule. You know, like they have the they understand the regulatory aspect, right? Regulation is good and bad. And I think there's just too much regulation in the US right now. And a lot of the big companies, and I would say a lot of the established players are hiding behind this regulation, which is basically why they're not innovating, because they don't need to. But I do think they innovate. And so that's one of the biggest problems of just like all the regulatory hurdles that startups are going to have to sort of like manage. And I think there's also a generational change right now. A lot of the millennials don't have money right now. I think that's going to change over the next 10 years as sort of like this money passes from the boomers to sort of like the, the millennials inherit, that is going to shift, right? So all of a sudden there's going to be, right now the market demand is not, I'm going to say there is market demand, but it's not pressing. And I think that is going to change over the next 10 years, where if these big companies do not adapt to the needs of these newer companies, if they don't adapt to the needs of these newer users and newer customers, they're probably going to be toast. And that's actually where I think the startup opportunity is. If you're starting to work with these early stage, like, you look at companies like Public or whatever people think about, like Robinhood. Like Robinhood is like it's very easy to use, and it's very much built for that younger generation, right? And so you look at instruments and products like that, where it's like, I think they're instrumenting themselves to sort of be like the dominant player like 10 to 20 years from now. It's smart. And so I do see sort of like a big change in the US, but that's not going to happen for a while. So realistically, I think most of the innovation is going to be happening from new places, like in the Philippines or any of the big African, like Nigeria. I have a portfolio company called Chipper Cash. So it's just like incredible company, right? And that head company has grown way faster and bigger than I've ever expected it to be. Wow. And so it's just like examples like that, where you see a lot of the future sort of like, in my opinion, a lot of the future innovations in fintech are going to be coming from places like India, from Africa, from Latin America. I don't think it's going to be coming from like Western Europe or the US. Like I spend a lot of time, I'm on the board of a very successful gaming company out of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. The banking system there in some ways is very behind, but if you look at like the innovations that are happening, like in the payment space there, like really, really far ahead, they're doing some really interesting things. And so you look at the edges, innovation actually comes from the edges.
Yeah. And so how do you see crypto and blockchain figuring in this new world that we're going into?
I mean, I think there is something about it where crypto is really a movement. And I legitimately say this, it's almost like a religious movement. And there's a power to that. There's actually a lot of power to that. But the structure of decentralization is quite interesting. I don't know enough, like I can't consider myself an expert in this at all.
Okay.
But I've done a lot of like reading and writing and talking to people about this space over the last, like, I'd say 2.5-3 years. I've read everything I possibly can on this area. And the thing that's fascinating about it, where like I understand why a lot of young people sort of like are really attracted to this, because of the promise of crypto, of this decentralization, of financial inclusion, right? Of removing a lot of the middlemen that are just like sucking out, like, Western Union. Who supports Western Union, right? Oh. Like just like awful company, right? Yeah. Like as an example, or MoneyGram, like, really like egregious when it takes like and really preying on sort of like really preying on probably people that really can't afford to sort of like pay the fees that
vulnerable
they charge.
People. Yeah, for sure.
And so that's sort of the promise, or even like things like NFTs. Like I know it's really bubblish right now, but the promise of NFTs are like, hey, like it's no different than, hey, remember like the athlete that you sort of like bet on early days, or like that person is going to be somebody, right? And really do some interesting things, or like the rock band or the artist, where it's like this person has promise and supporting them from the beginning. And then sort of like, this is what NFTs ultimately is, right? Like I'm going to back you from the beginning, like as a community, and as the community, supports and helps grow this artist. And I mean the artist broadly, right? Like that could be an athlete, that could be like, hey, like all of a sudden, like when they're big and they're, you're benefiting from that as well too. So it's in your interest. So like, it's almost like this alignment of interests, right? Of both financial, but also sort of like the political and social capital of just like, hey, I back this person from day one, or I back this art from day one, and look at them now. And now you can actually like financially benefit from that. Like, I think that's interesting. Like that's how I think about that.
I've had other investors saying that definitely the froth at the moment will be different than where it ends up with the NFTs. So I find that interesting.
But the mechanism itself of just, you have to look deeply, right? Of just like how many e-commerce companies came out in like, 96, 97, 98, 99. Most of them didn't make it, but the ones that did became very, very big, right? So there are kernels of like truth in sort of the froth, right? So it's one of those things of just like, can you go and pick the sort of like the signal from the noise. And that this is hard, right? Like nobody, like anyone who says they can do that is like lying, right? Like you're ultimately guessing, you know, educated guessing, but like you're guessing.
And so tell me, Marvin, you know, you being in the Bay Area as well, what do you think about the movement of out of Silicon Valley? Like, so many people are leaving and so much change. What do you think's happening around that? Because obviously it's been the holy grail for a long, long time.
I think it's overblown. And so truth of the matter is I've spent maybe a total of like 3 months here in the Bay Area. I've traveled. I'm in Europe a lot. I'm in Taiwan and Asia a lot, and Canada a lot. Just because honestly, they're just nicer places to live, right? and less expensive and closer to family. But actually just nicer places to live. But the reality is that I still keep my place here. I'm still here. I'm here now. I'm in and out over the next like couple weeks and couple months, but like this is still the same. And a lot of young people moved here. So if you look at a lot of the people who left, a lot more established already. And so when you leave, like you have a network already, right? Like you have a network, you leave, you have a network, so you can always come back. But I think, and so the most of those people who left were established. It's not the up-and-comers. And so, you know, the reality is that a lot of the up-and-comers came here like last year. Because you're like, this is still the place to build, and they might not be here forever, but SF has always been a boom and bust town. So people are in and out all the time. I don't think that's changed. And so, you know, my view here is like, this is still going to be the center, because this is still one of those places where there's still critical mass of like, of money, of lawyers, of angel investors, of smart founders. That doesn't change. And I love the places I go to, like, you know, I love Kiev, I love Tbilisi, I love Taipei. Yeah. You know, I love Vancouver, I love Montreal, like all these places, Mexico City, but like you just don't have the critical mass of people. Like even all these places, you still do not have the critical mass of the conversation things you still have here.
And I don't think anywhere else in the world has such a high concentration of venture capitalists. So
that is slowly changing. I would say probably like Beijing and Shanghai probably do. That's their own separate ecosystem, right? Where I'm just like, I have like, you know, I watch it closely, but I don't really understand it, and I will never play there. I literally will never ever play there because I have no edge and I just don't understand, right? Like it's its own ecosystem. But I think in the Western world, it's still SF Bay Area, even though California and SF is doing everything they can to wreck it. I'm talking about like the government, right? Of just like, and I'm not a libertarian, but I just think like there's a very anti-tech. I think the leftist woke movement is also kind of like doing some weird stuff here, what I call the progressives. And so this is not meant to be political, but just like, it's very interesting of just sort of how they've just become very anti-tech and blaming all the issues on tech. It's not all tech-driven issues here, right?
Not at all. In fact, it'd be great to see some of the homeless problems cleaned up, because that has, 11 years.
SF is terrifying.
There.
SF is terrifying.
It just got worse and worse every year, and to the point where I can't even bear to go into San Francisco anymore.
Yeah, you can't.
It's filthy.
It's filthy.
Even for the homeless people, it's filthy. Like, what's going on?
And that is not a tech issue. That's actually the ultra left progressive not wanting to do anything about it, or just throwing more money at it problem, right? And so this is not like I voted Democrat. Like this is like Marvin's like this libertarian. Like no, I'm not, right? Like I'm a Democrat, left leaning. I grew up in Canada, like you know, somewhat socialist. So just like I buy all this stuff. Like I'm a believer in government, but like it's, you know, like California government and
something
San Francisco
wrong.
Government is very dysfunctional. It's really, really dysfunctional. Like Canada is a socialist government that works to some extent, right? They have their issues, but it works. Just like Australia and other Commonwealth countries, like it works. So I do believe in some level of socialism, but like, you know, to the level that we have here in the SF Bay Area, where it's like, it's just dystopian now, where it's just dysfunctional, it's dystopian. Yeah. And it's because of this like weird situation. And so I really worry about that, right? Like a lot of people come here, we want to make things better, but just like it's just really hard. And I don't know. Yeah. It's just like voting for lesser of evils, unfortunately.
Yeah. And definitely tech is not to blame for that. It's local government. So,
yeah.
Well, look, Marvin, totally inspiring. So great to talk to you today. And I know my listeners will really enjoy when I publish this. So thank you again for joining in.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's great to talk to someone who's optimistic about the future, right? Like there, we have a lot of problems, but I feel like we have no choice but to solve them, right? And
exactly.
I do think tech is an enabler of that. Like tech is neutral, but I think most people in tech want to do something good. We legitimately want to do something good. It's not
change
just
the
about
world.
Yeah, in a good way. In a good way, hopefully.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Marvin. Okay.
Thank you for having me.
Okay.